From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo unveils his budget proposal. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on the $142 billion plan, and we'll take a look at the proposal for a new innovation network. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo unveiled a $142 billion state budget this week that includes federal aid for post-Superstorm Sandy recovery and closes a $1.3 billion budget gap. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt explains.
Governor Cuomo, facing his third lean fiscal year as governor, would close a $1.3 billion budget gap by holding spending flat for state agencies and putting off a cost of living increase for health care providers. He wants to raid a fund for workers' compensation with the promise of reforming the entire system and raise a small number of fees, including higher fines for texting or using a cell phone while driving.
And this is a different mentality than the old mentality that said every year put more money in the budget, more money on the budget, more money in the budget. More money in the budget will mean more results. No, more money in the budget just meant more money in the budget.
Nevertheless, the governor is increasing school aid by 4%, though he punishes the city of New York for not meeting a January 17th deadline to complete a teacher evaluation plan and will withhold the city's increase. Cuomo provides $25 million for all-day pre-kindergarten in the state's poorest school districts, and he'll give out $20 million in grants to districts who want to extend the school day or school year. Economic development incentives include $50 million to promote technology clusters, an historic preservation tax credit, and an already announced $60 million deal with the Buffalo Bills.
And all I can tell you is for $60 million, the Bills better win this year, my friends. Talk about performance funding.
Cuomo says he can't provide extra money for financially struggling local governments, but he does offer some relief. Municipalities and schools can sign up for a pension stabilization program. It would allow them to pay less for pensions now, with ballooning payments several years into the future. The largest public workers union, the Civil Service Employee Association, calls it a bait-and-switch plan. Cuomo would also let localities raise sales tax rates without seeking permission from the legislature. The governor plans to use billions of dollars in federal aid for Superstorm Sandy to better rebuild homes and, in some cases, buy back the houses. He says he'll also improve the state's emergency fuel and water supplies and protect the subway system and other infrastructure from future floods in what he says will be a massive effort.
That requires immediate assistance on a grand scale.
The federally funded programs would also apply to victims of 2011 storms Irene and Lee. Reaction from the legislature was largely positive. Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos finds little to disagree with.
No tax increases. I do not want to see us borrow our way out of a deficit.
But Senator Skelos says he wants to examine school aid distribution numbers more carefully to make sure his home district of Long Island gets its fair share. Senate Independent Conference Leader Jeff Klein, who has a power-sharing agreement with the GOP in the Senate, is pleased that the governor included the proposal to increase the state's minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $8.75 an hour. He says he's happy that Cuomo justified the increase by saying it would be an economic economic development boost.
Increasing the minimum wage creates jobs, close to 5,000 new jobs, and creates over $600 million in new spending, which, by the way, is going to go right back into the pockets of small businesses when minimum wage workers continue to spend when they get that increase.
Senator Klein says he'd like to see in the budget, though, a tax credit for small businesses to hire unemployed veterans. Assembly Ways and Means Committee Chair Denny Farrell, who's seen his share of budget fights, says for the third year in a row, the spending plan should come together smoothly.
This is the third year of magic. If you believe in magic.
But Farrell says he might object to a provision that would hold future minimum wage increases to a cost of living index. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week the governor put out his budget proposal, $142 billion plan. One of the issues on the table, our Allison Dunn covering it this week, is mandate relief.
Well, you know, David, obviously Andrew Cuomo, perhaps on his way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, has decided that the way you deal with the rest of the country is to say, hey, I solved the tax problem in New York State, and therefore I can do this for the country. Now, it's a good idea, except it comes at the expense of local communities. We know that. And so he puts a tax cap on the local community. Sure, there are ways around it, but you got to really work hard to do it. And so you're hearing a lot of screaming from the schools and the local governments and others. So in this budget, they looked very carefully for what they're calling mandate relief. Now, people say to me, what is mandate relief? Well, you know, the state comes along and they tell you you have to do this, this, and this, and you just have to do what they tell you, but they don't give you any money sometimes for doing it. And so the idea would be, what's the mandate relief? My mother used to kid around and she used to say, that the only thing that mattered to the Board of Education in New York when she was a teacher was that you keep the window open 3 inches from the top. And it's a pretty funny idea of this incredible number of mandates that the state has imposed, some of which are just sort of silly. And so along comes the governor with a plan. And one of the plans is that you're going to tell the localities that you can borrow money from the pension plan with idea that you're going to be looking for efficiencies down the road in that. Borrowing stinks. My mother told me that. Don't borrow. You borrow, you're in trouble. And so what he's suggesting, and McManus, the former editorial writer in The Post, comes along and says, this is not a good idea, Mr. Governor. So now he's alienated not only some of the communities, but he's now beginning to alienate some of his right-wing partners on the New York Post.
Into all this, of course, the issue of leadership in the Senate. We see that Cecilia Kacik, the Democrat, came back ahead after some court challenges to beat Republican George Amador in the 46th Senate District. And before this all occurred, we had a sort of coalition in the Senate with Jeffrey Klein, the Democrat, and Dean Skelos, the Republican, and others. What's going to happen now as we go into budget negotiations?
Well, I have to give you a long, windy, boring answer, but here it is. Okay. You will remember that the way that they draw the districts in New York is that the leader of the majority party in either house goes to the great computer on the wall and says, oh, great computer, draw me districts where I can't lose. So they drew one. And this guy Amador, who was a Republican, it was drawn specifically for him. He was the assemblyman. He couldn't lose. Into this very studio we're speaking now, Liz Krueger, otherwise known as the good Krueger in the New York State Senate, as opposed to the bad one who's in jail, Carl Krueger. Liz Krueger comes along and she brings this young-ish woman who's on the local school board. And she speaks, moderately. And I turn around to my producer and I say, she can't win, can she? Well, she did. And my friend Natalie Merchant said, I knew she would win, Chartok. I'm a better political son than you are. So, and Kacik ran on the theme of, this is a bad idea, the way we're doing our election laws and the rest of it. I want clean elections in New York State. Well, she moved heaven and hell, and guess what? She won. But before she won, it was so close that they brought it before a judge. Guess what party the judge was in up there? The Republican Party. And guess what he did? He said, well, everybody vote should be counted. And you count all these over here and all these over here. But just so you will understand, you're still 36 votes short somehow. And 36 means we don't have shared elections here. So she, from the Republican judge, they appealed to the New York State Appellate Division. And the New York State Appellate Division is the second highest court. And they rule that all that, a whole bunch of new votes have to be opened. And sure enough, she wins. Wait a second. Do you mean to say that the way this works is if you get the right judge of the right party, you win? Well, I said that on these airwaves once, and I heard from a very good friend who's a top judge in New York who thought I had spoken inappropriately. No, I spoke appropriately, and it's a sad thing. Now Kachik is saying, let's clean up the election laws so that everybody's vote counts. I just saw a wonderful piece by James Taylor, my good friend. And you know what he said? He said, this country should have a national holiday called Election Day, that everybody gets time off to vote. Everybody's flipping hamburgers and doing all the rest of that. And you know who those people are mostly? They're Democrats, I'll tell you right now. Everybody gets to vote on one day, and that's it. And you can do all the other stuff you want, but that one day is sacrosanct. What a good idea.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn continues our examination of the governor's budget proposal now and the specific issue of mandate relief.
In the governor's State of the State address, there was no mention of mandate relief. Yet several county executives said they were not expecting to hear much about it then, that it would be during the governor's budget address where they would expect some details about coping with unfunded mandates. Governor Cuomo did speak to unfunded mandates in his budget address Tuesday, introducing the topic this way.
Local governments and school districts continue to struggle with pension costs. The number increase here is staggering and it's frightening. 1,000% increase over a decade.
Stephen Aquario is the executive director of the New York State Association of Counties, or NYSAC.
What we didn't see is additional state resources for state programs being delivered by counties, but we did see the state providing tools to the counties. What were they? Pension reform, a very serious problem for the counties. The number one issue facing us outside of Medicaid is pension costs. The governor recognizing that, providing some relief to the local governments in this regard, a very important and critical component of his mandate relief package. We will be supporting that proposal, and we will be working with the state legislature to make sure that happens. The governor provided some audit authority in the area of special education, which counties are involved with. It provided some additional home rule authority with respect to enacting local sales taxes or extending those sales taxes.
Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro says he did not expect sweeping mandate relief in the budget proposal, but the Republican did expect to hear about incremental improvements and says there were some tools offered to municipalities in this regard.
Dutchess County will work with our state legislative delegation to advocate for the people of this community, and mandate relief and overall consolidation and transformation of government at every level needs to be a priority so that we can be effective in providing the service that we're expected to provide and ultimately drive down the cost to taxpayers, all within the context of creating greater economic benefit and opportunity for those who are unemployed and underemployed throughout the state of New York.
Democratic State Assemblyman Kevin Cahill, who represents Dutchess and Ulster counties, says he will work with local leaders and help advocate for mandate relief.
The mandate costs that are most crippling to county governments right now are the cost of Medicaid, the cost of health insurance for their employees, and the pension costs for their employees. The governor has proposed a plan to allow them to have a glide path toward the ultimate savings that they're going to get, and to enjoy some of the savings today. I think it's an interesting proposal and one we should look at.
The governor proposed a Tier 6 savings financing plan for pension relief by which municipalities could finance against savings they would realize in the later years of the previously passed plan. Mike Spano is the mayor of Yonkers, a Westchester city in financial distress.
I think there was a recognition finally on the part of the state that the cities need help.
Yet the Democrat is not in favor of the governor's proposed Financial Restructuring Assistance Task Force to offer advice to municipalities to help restructure their finances.
The economic model that cities have used throughout the years just doesn't work. So I'm glad to see that they're recognizing that. I think that some of the proposals were light in the fact that they call for more control. What cities do not need right now is a control board. What cities need are lifelines and help and the ability to actually manage their own finances, which is hindered currently by state law.
Meanwhile, NYSAC's Stephen Aquario says his group will participate in budget negotiations with the governor, state legislators, and county leaders.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Another area of Governor Cuomo's budget proposal focuses on relief and rebuilding from Superstorm Sandy. We get more on that from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
Andrew Cuomo's 2013-2014 state budget includes ways to use a total of $30 billion over several years in expected federal funding to restore communities devastated by Superstorm Sandy. He also plans to use some aid for upstate communities still recovering from Tropical Storms Irene and Lee in 2011. A number of those communities are in Ulster County, where Mike Hine is county executive.
First and foremost, obviously, we're excited to hear that the hurricane flood buyout programs also apply to Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee, things that obviously were huge impacts in our community. In fact, in Ulster County, it's the worst natural disaster we have ever experienced.
Assemblyman Pete Lopez expects communities in his district will tap into the fund.
For housing, for continued restoration, in some cases, there will be some stream rehab, and I'm not sure how that'll play out because the needs are different. When they talk about waterfront redevelopment, we still have stream rehab requirements and needs. So I'll be eagerly awaiting the detail on that.
The governor's budget proposal will boost the Environmental Protection Fund for the first time in 3 years, increasing it by $19 million to $153 million. The budget includes $135 million of new funding for DEC, OPRHP, the Department of Agriculture and Markets, and the Olympic Regional Development Authority under the New York Works program. State Senator Liz Krueger.
He didn't go into that much detail about some of his environmental proposals, but by looking through the paperwork, I see that there's a commitment of additional money to solar energy. There's a commitment to change the structure of the PSC, Public Service Commission, which I think is a critical issue. Out of Sandy came the Moreland Commission on what happened with the utilities. I think there's an enormous amount of work that New York State needs to do to ensure that we have a modern energy grid and that we have utility companies who are responsible and appropriately making the investments we need in a 21st century energy system.
The Cleaner, Greener Communities program, administered by NYSERDA to fund energy efficiency and renewable energy projects, will be supplemented by a net $10 million in new state funding. Not everyone attending the budget address left the room without lingering questions or concerns, Senator Tom Libous among them.
I'm always sitting with my ears open when the governor's speaking because I would like to hear something about hydrofracking. Didn't hear it. I didn't really expect it. But hopefully within the next month or so, we're going to hear a definitive answer one way or the other. I'm hoping that's a positive answer and we can begin the process.
Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb says the Cuomo administration has to make a decision soon regarding fracking.
And I think everybody's waiting for that answer. We're supposed to have an answer by mid-February. And if they go forward, that'll mean, I believe, increased revenues to the state coffers for economic development. And depending, again, how they implement it, I think that's just a huge question mark. And everybody's waiting for the governor and D.C. to make a statement, and hopefully we'll get it sooner rather than later.
One official who asked to remain anonymous says Cuomo will not address hydrofracking until a state health study is completed.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Governor Cuomo has outlined a number of efforts in his 2013 agenda to encourage the commercialization of academic research and entrepreneurship. They include a new innovation network and a state-run investment fund. The Innovation Trail's Ryan Delaney takes a look now at the plans.
In his State of the State address earlier this month, the governor pointed out that New York is second only to California for research dollars flowing to its college campuses. Where New York falls behind is leveraging the $150 billion worth of federally funded research in the marketplace to generate economic development. Cuomo has his eye on a Southern California effort that's doing a better job of that than his state.
We need to change the culture in order to encourage tech transfer and commercialization of ideas across the board.
Cuomo cited a program in San Diego called Connect, a private effort started almost three decades ago to bring together engineers and scientists on college campuses with startup companies or turn those researchers into entrepreneurs themselves. Dwayne Roth, CEO of Connect, says New York already has the hard part down.
You don't have to take decades to build up the research excellence. You already got that. Can you quickly now organize so that you can make commercializing these ideas a priority and bring all the resources to bear on that? But the hard ones you already got. People, money, research.
Dr. Tim Killeen, head of the State University of New York's Research Foundation, agrees. Killeen is one of three people, along with Cornell University President David Skorton and investor Jim Simons, picked by Cuomo to create the Innovation New York Network.
So there are many aspects that are already in play, and it's really in some senses connecting the dots and creating more of a end-to-end process for economic development.
The Innovation New York Network would be statewide, so there will be logistical obstacles. But Dwayne Roth says if New York pushes hard enough to instill a new culture of innovation, it will be successful. Cuomo is also trying to capitalize on a new culture of entrepreneurship across the state. While New York City has become a major player in the tech startup scene, upstate cities are also beginning to see more startup efforts pay off.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michael, the founder of Full Circle Feed.
Efforts like the Startup Labs competition, underway right now at the Syracuse Technology Garden, a downtown business incubator. Under a proposal by Governor Cuomo, the Tech Garden could become one of 10 designated innovation hotspots. These hotspots would become tax-free havens for startups. According to Cuomo's budget plans, any company that starts out in a designated hotspot will not have to pay any taxes for 5 years. Seth Mulligan is one of the directors of the Tech Garden. He's also been asked by the Cuomo administration to help form the hotspots. He says it'll be important for the designated sites to be able to work with area universities.
Some of our best assets are the knowledge and the equipment that reside in these campuses, and any way that we can get private sector to gain access to those is the better.
Cuomo's regional economic development councils will have the final say over designating the hotspots. Mulligan says there are a number of good contenders for Central New York alone, including Syracuse's Center of Excellence. A hotspot designation would bring additional support, and Mulligan says an increased demand for manpower to run them.
You know, this is going to take, you know, 2 to 3 professionals being assigned to this project to get as many companies through the door as you can. You're helping them with business development and mentorship and coaching.
Cuomo's budget lays out $1.25 million to help the first designated hotspots get up and running, with that amount growing to $5 million as the program expands. But Cuomo wants to spend a lot more than that to help see new companies grow. New York struggles in bringing in venture capital, money from private investors. To help counter that, the Cuomo administration proposed a $50 million state-run venture capital fund. The fund would be administered by Empire State Development and paid for through the New York Power Authority. New York currently attracts only 4% of the country's venture capital, compared to California's 47%. The state fund probably won't close that formidable gap, but Mulligan says any amount will help. In Syracuse, I'm Ryan Delaney for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1304 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.